Is that enough glory and work for everybody?
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Tim Wick, Nick Glover, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we talk about religion in the UK with our friend Elliot James, who's a real, live, honest-to-God Englishman, so he knows what he's talking about. Unlike us, we never know what we're talking about, like, ever.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Tim Wick, joined, as always, by my co-host, Molly Glover.
Hello.
And Nick Glover.
That's me.
That's right. Well done.
It is.
I'm assuming you're not a pod person.
Thank
I'm a
you
poking.
For
I'm
we, correctly identifying me as correct.
We are.
I'm
we
poking
are joined.
It feels normal.
We are joined by expatriate Elliot. Damn it, Elliot! I just lost your last name.
James.
James. Yeah. It's so fucking easy.
It's a very English name.
Yeah. Elliot
Even
James.
Even if I was known, named after FDR's son.
I have another. Oh, nice. I have another friend named Elliot Scheid. And so I don't know. I don't know why I got lost. But anyway, Elliot James is here. He is English by birth
and by accent
American by passport.
Yes.
Historically British.
Yes. Empirically, as it were.
Yeah. And so, culturally, I'm not assimilated.
That's right. You are not assimilated. Mm-hmm. You still drink tea, isn't that right?
On occasion.
Oh, there you shit, go. I drink tea. It's
Who
catching.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Ever since he got here, we're turning more English.
It's true. I have a bowler hat on. Where did this come from?
That's not a bad thing.
No, it's not.
Tim, put down that monocle. No.
So, Elliot.
Socialized medicine.
you are here specifically so we can talk about religion in the UK.
Or the lack of.
Or the lack of. In the UK, as you are something of an expert. Now, how long have you been an expatriate?
Actually, 19 years.
19 years.
So. Oh, all right.
So I've had enough time, but the interwebs, thank you, Mr.
So,
Gore, it's great. You can keep in touch.
96. That's
yeah.
Right, yes. All right, so you came over the year I graduated from high school. That's a good...
I know.
That's that's a good time. No, that was a good time to be in America, though. I can see how you were watching it basically just slowly decline after that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, politically.
Got here just in time to see, like, the pre-Bush.
The Republican right.
Bush.
Yeah.
We watched the decline with Reagan.
Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. And you, let's see, you came over here, 96, that would be, Princess Di was already dead?
No, she died.
No, she died.
She died 97.
Yeah, she died in 97.
She wasn't quite dead.
I remember.
Not quite dead. She's
not
still
dead.
Somehow alive, I guess.
Yes. She's being chased a lot, though, so almost dead.
You are an American citizen, and we were talking before we started. Now, why are you an American citizen?
Well, it gives me a great opportunity that now I can actually vote against the Republicans rather than just live under their rule and bitch about.
When did you get your citizenship?
Yeah. 2000.
All right.
Hey, that's the advantage of marrying an American. You get fast track.
Oh, yeah?
Sure.
I can see that.
So, religion in England versus religion in America. Why don't you tell us, what is it like... have you been an atheist all your life?
Or? Yes, actually. Well, my background was my mother was vaguely Episcopalian or Anglican.
Uh-huh.
My father had been brought up as a high church, and we'll talk a little more about that, a high church Episcopalian, and had drifted into agnosticism. So I didn't have a religious upbringing at home, but... from K through 12, when I was going to school, which was the 60s and 70s, you had the one compulsory subject every week was religious education of a predominantly Christian nature.
Huh. Was that like the name of the class, or are you just kidding?
No, it was just religious education, and it was Christianity.
Well, yeah. I mean, and what else would it have been?
Except for one week where they're like, oh, and there's also Islam.
No, they didn't even... In my period of schooling, there was never any mention of any other religion than Christianity.
Really? Huh. Were there a lot of Indians living in in England at the time? I know there are
not
now.
Not in my part of the country. The largest population we had of immigrants were Poles who come over after the Second World War. And it was pretty much through the British education system, where you have compulsory religion, it's great for turning out atheists. And what it was, at age 8, I turn round and, I start to think about, they did the Noah story, and I start to think about it. And I thought to myself, this isn't right. Well, why are we worshipping? He saved all these animals.
Yes.
What about the billions that got drowned?
Yeah. Hooray, that was God's will.
And
they deserved it.
No, they didn't, because animals are, No.
They
and that was what sent me on my spiral of doubt. And it got worse as it went on. I was sort of that Hermione Granger type kid at school.
A big nerd.
Me too.
And I discovered heresy. And so I actually read quite, by the time I'm up to 14, 15, 16, I'm reading a lot on stuff on heresy.
Nice.
And I start sneaking it into the essays that I have to write.
Just so everybody knows, by the way, heresy is legal in England.
And so, but the big difference, we like to think of probably England as a cute version of the United States.
It's adorable.
In some ways.
But it's a very different culture, and I think the big thing that differentiates it is the degree of religiosity. And I suspect it has two causes. Remember that the main island, England, Scotland, Wales, takes up about the same amount of space as Minnesota.
Right.
That's so crazy.
It's not much bigger. And, you could fit the whole of, including Northern Ireland, in fact, the whole of Ireland in England, into Iowa and Minnesota.
Sure. Oh, wow.
In terms. Now, take that main space of Minnesota. Population about 58 million people. Twin Cities metro area, 10 million people.
Gosh.
So not as rural, and the rural bits there are so much closer to industrial centres or large population centres that you don't get this sense of isolation and internalization and you are encountering different cultures, you're encountering different people, and you're not as insular.
We're really sprawled. We have dense areas of population, but then there's large amounts of space. Those next tiers out are huge.
Absolutely.
Our
like
suburbs.
Scattering.
We don't just have suburbs. We have first tier, second tier, and third tier suburbs before you finally get to rural areas where there are farms and stuff like that.
But once you get to the rural areas, it's rural for a. It's
rural
really
for
broad.
Thousands of miles.
I just drove from the Twin Cities to Sioux City, South Dakota, and it's like a 4-hour drive from my house there. And you get out of the Twin Cities after an hour. And for the next 2.5 to 3 hours, it's mostly farmland. You drive through Mankato, which is middling big, but still takes about 5 minutes to get through.
And the other thing is, in terms of driving, here I have done it, drive, say, to Vicksburg for a weekend, down into Mississippi. That would be the equivalent of me driving from London to Rome.
And that's just not being done.
Nobody would think of doing that for a weekend. You plan it as a vacation.
Would they take a train as a mini break or something? Or
sorry to talk over you.
No, it's fine.
That kind of distance, they'd fly.
Okay.
I'm just like, because I love the rail system in Europe, and I would take the train just because you can actually fucking take a train in Europe.
Absolutely.
And it'll get you somewhere.
And the other thing is, it's not worth driving because if I tell this to Americans, they say, oh, I'm going to drive here, I'm going to drive from London to Edinburgh. I say, good luck with that. That's going to be, you could do it in a day. I'd probably take 2 days over it. Look at on your interstates. You're probably going to average 45, 50 miles an hour of volume of traffic.
Hmm.
Once you get onto the equivalent of a federal highway, you might average 30 miles.
Oh, boy.
If you're lucky, 25, probably, you know, depends which one you're taking, how, but there's a lot more traffic.
Huge.
And so your travel distances are not as huge, but the time it takes. The other thing is, we seem to have had a very different experience with the Cold War. Europe didn't go through McCarthyism.
And the concept of atheist equals communist equals villain, and therefore God is the only way.
The godless red threat. For sure.
And the thing is,
I think that's huge.
We as a society had accepted the concept of atheists as MPs in the 19th century. Mm. It took a little while. The first atheist to be elected, they refused to seat him because he refused to take an oath, because it was a biblical oath to uphold the Christian faith. And he said, I'm an atheist. And they said, well, you can't be an MP, so we're going to call a by-election. And they called a by-election, and he was re-elected. After he was re-elected for about the third time, they said, well, maybe we better reconsider this whole thing.
In the 19th century.
And so we've had atheist politicians. Our current prime minister is an avowed atheist.
It's literally illegal to hold office in 13 states in this union if you are an atheist.
And the big one with Tony Blair. Tony Blair was deeply distrusted when he became prime minister because his press secretary, you know, his chief of staff, press secretary guy turned around and said, Tony, we don't do God. And he was an openly...
He was fairly religious.
He was really religious, and we view that with suspicion.
As you should.
I wish. I'm so jealous.
That explains why he and Bush got on.
Yeah, even though you've also got the monarchy, and of course the monarchy is the head of the English, the Church of England.
Yes.
And
but the thing is, and this is something else, and it goes back to the founding of the country, you have to understand that the monarch has had politically very little power since 1690.
Mm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Because we had our Bill of Rights that basically turned around and said, yes, we've got a monarch and we've got a parliament and we have fought civil wars for the last 50 years on this particular point, and parliament is now dominant and the monarch will behave. And this is one of the things that really gets me about series like Outlander. You know, the Highlanders are the heroes. No, you wanted to bring back one of the most disastrous dynasties the British ever had. Oh, and by the way, he's an avowed Catholic who wanted to re-Catholicize England.
William the Usurper?
That's Good King Billy. It's Charles Stuart, Prince Charlie.
Ah, yes.
Yes. Who?
Don't get me started on the Scots.
Yeah.
Remember, Scotland has half the population of London.
All of Scotland.
All of Scotland. Yeah.
All of Scotland has half the population of London.
And half of that is sheep.
My mom is super obsessed with the Outlander books and the show.
And your Scottish heritage.
She's pretty.
She's keen on it.
Keen on our Scottish heritage, but and that's like 1800s through Canada for us. But
so the percentage, and I mean I realize this is changing, but it's almost like 50% of England is none or atheist at this point.
Yeah, it's getting there. There is a vague deism, and that brings us obviously to the established church. we've got the whole split, which I know you talked about on the religious wars program a couple of years, so I don't really want to revisit that.
Did we get it kind of right?
Pretty much, except for the bit on Ireland.
Oh, okay.
And I'll just put this one. Ireland overall as a... if you take the whole of the country...
Sure, north and south.
North and south. It's a predominantly Catholic country.
Right.
But when they drew the lines after the Irish Civil War or the independence and then the... in the 1920s, the bit that stuck with Britain was majority Protestant.
Maybe I got that backwards, because I knew that.
Yeah, but. So really it was a... And now, I'm not saying that the Northern Irish Protestants behaved in any way reasonably towards their minority brethren. And that was really... The problem with the troubles when it started in the late 60s, what had happened was the British turned round and said, we are suspending your federal little parliament in Northern Ireland, so it's and we're sending in our troops and you're going to be directly ruled. It's like, oh, you've so fucked up ruling South Carolina, we are suspending your government and we are reconstructing you. And that was the start of the troubles.
And the Irish.
And the
I wonder why that didn't work.
What happened was that the Sinn Féin IRA, and there's no real difference between the two of them, turned around and said, there's going to be a honeymoon period. And then people are going to get pissed off because they're being ruled directly by the English, and we can exploit that. And this is our path to independence. And so really, as an Englishman growing up there, a couple of things. We really used to piss off our headmaster by singing We're All Off to Dublin in the Green, which was an IRA song. That really pissed off the masters.
That's amazing.
Listening in the song.
We actually did that. But the main... teenage rebellion. From our point of view, we basically said, oh, gods, we wish you'd just go away and not be our problem. You know, and I missed a couple of bombs in London, places I had been, that day had been blown up.
Wow.
I heard from where I was living the big bombing in Canary Wharf back in 1995.
The huge,
you know, so it was something you lived with.
So when you missed those bombs, you figured that was a miracle, right?
But seriously, though, when those happened, did you think religion or did you think politics?
Politics.
Okay, so that didn't make you go, fucking religion. Like,
no, it was a tribal fight.
Because over here, they really made it sound like it was about religion.
It's Protestants versus Catholics.
That is all they talked about over here. When we got the news, like when they talked about it on the news for us, like growing up as kids, I mean, as a teenager, it was all...
Orange and green.
Orange and green. Protestant versus Catholic. That's all it is.
That is part of their tribal identity.
Sure. But they made it... Yeah, they made it like the churches. But it's a case of,
no, my tribe is Protestant, your tribe is Catholic, and we're fighting for... a degree of dominance and whether we treat you decently.
It's just interesting how they simplified it over here and they couched it in terms of religion because that's what America is.
And it's a convenient handle.
Absolutely.
But I do not necessarily view it as a religious fight because a lot of the Protestants in Northern Ireland were actually transplanted Scots. The English are very good. We get great Scots make great and great sort of mercenaries. You know, we take these troublesome Scots from the lowlands. We plonk them in Northern Ireland to keep the native Irish down.
Yeah, yeah.
And
Yeah. So back to our topic.
Yeah.
Of our podcast.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Right, no.
That's all right.
But no,
I asked the question.
It has religious identity.
Right.
And it comes out of a lot of the fear of the Protestant point, or the majority in the North, that, oh, we're going to have Catholicism pushed down our throats. And mm-hmm. these people have got a very 17th century mindset. They're still fighting the 30
yeah.
Years' War.
I think it really does speak to the topic, though, that the
yeah.
difference in, I mean, that living over there,
yeah.
it didn't feel religious.
Whereas,
it felt political, whereas living over here, they made it very religious.
I would say possibly you need somebody who's native Irish to give
oh,
you,
sure.
because
well,
I am giving you the view from the mainland,
yeah.
looking down on these damn Celts fighting amongst themselves.
We've had Finn, who's the host of the Skeprecons podcast,
mm-hmm.
who's an Irish
mm-hmm.
Atheist podcaster.
We're totally going to have her back on.
Yeah,
absolutely.
She recorded with us last Convergence Center.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
And she talked a lot about
abortion,
the state of abortion law in Ireland,
yes.
and how
the
it is
Magdalene Laundry.
Very much a religious.
And
controlling the law there and how it's so backwards for her. And as an Irish person who's an atheist, she feels she is in the minority, and
yeah.
she feels very
whereas that's less
legally.
That's less of an issue in the United Kingdom as a whole. Now, when they frame their abortion bill, though, abortion is legal in the United Kingdom, except you can't get an abortion in Northern Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
You have to travel to the mainland as a sop to the local politicians over there.
Right.
So it's legal, and there isn't the same fault. I'll give you an example of the last time there was a major push to restrict abortion in the United Kingdom. And they were trying to bring it down. And Margaret Thatcher was Prime Minister.
Yeah.
Mm.
And she stood up and said to the House, the bills can be introduced in a number of ways in the in the UK Parliament. Most of them are presented by the government.
Uh-huh.
But they have a system known as a private member's bill. And the backbenchers of all the parties can take part in a lottery, and whoever with the top three are the ones who actually get the committee time and then
okay.
the time to introduce it. So it was a member of the British Liberal Party who was a Catholic introduced a very restrictive abortion bill. This was back in the days of Margaret Thatcher, because I went on the demonstration against the bill, and she stood up in the House of Commons and said, to her Conservative Party colleague, she said, this is going to be a free vote. Each member will vote their conscience. I am going to vote against the bill because I believe in a woman's right to choose her own destiny.
Bizarre.
And, you know, here, Margaret Thatcher is held up as some form of Republican saint.
Right.
Oh, yeah, they act
now,
like... Yeah.
I don't think Americans understand the difference between the English Conservative Party or even European Conservatives.
That's
and
Margaret
American
Thatcher,
conservatives.
Though.
You know, I came over here and I would describe myself as, by and large, an English Tory. I was what was known as a One Nation Tory.
Mm-hmm.
And I going through it, and I meet Americans, they say, oh, are you a conservative or a liberal? I say, well, I'm a conservative. And they say, well, do you believe on this? And I say this, every single answer.
Yeah,
you know, and after about 3 months, I've realised I'm actually a Democrat, you know.
Yeah.
And I haven't changed my political views, because our Conservative Party is closer to the Democrats, and the
mm-hmm.
Labour Party is closer to the Progressives than
sure.
ever. The English are closer to the Republicans, Oh, by the way, some of our politicians do make that mistake as well. But I don't see the country's as right-wing as it is here. And that goes for Europe as well. And it comes back to this insularity and tendency of America. Let's face it, you're a huge country.
It's enormous.
And you don't look outside. You tend to look... No. Look at your presidents who don't have passports before they...
Oh, I know. Isn't that ridiculous? I just think that's so ridiculous.
You know, the last time I went to Europe was when I invaded it in 1944.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Well... Yeah, I mean, we are such a gigantic nation. I mean, to travel from one end to the other is further than I think traveling from one end of Europe to the other.
We've never been... I mean, when was the last time America was under actual foreign threat in any way where...
Oh, when we burnt... 1812, when we burnt Washington.
That's right. And
well done, by the way.
But we didn't have to go through the Blitz, or... I mean, we weren't directly affected in any sort of defensive way by World War II.
Any of the many wars we've been in.
Or in any of them. I mean, every war the United States has been in since the 1800s, we were... waging a war in someone else's country.
There's been terrorists one-offs, but there hasn't been a constant, like, it's months going into years of the fear.
The last war on American soil was the Civil War, and that was a totally different kind of war.
The other thing is, you don't have... The other thing I noticed when I came over here, I'm coming straight out of London and the IRA bombing campaigns, and people are just leaving bags on buses.
Mm-hmm.
And I go up to the bus, bus driver, and I said, "Somebody's left a bag." Well, he said, "Well, bring it up here."
Yeah, it'll go to the last
and
found.
My reaction is,
"I'm not going to touch that bag.
It might have a bomb in it." And I said that to him, and he said, "Don't be so fucking stupid."
Yeah, that's before shit. That's gonna be before McVeigh. Yeah. McVeigh was 94.
No, that's just about McVeigh's period.
And that's when things really started to domestic terror.
But you see, domestic terrorism is all one-off bombers.
Of course, sure. Yeah. Acting alone.
It's a lone bomber. It's not an organized thing. Unless it's Muslims.
Right, then they're very organized and they're everywhere.
Yeah.
And we're very afraid.
And they all talk to each other.
Of course, they all know each other.
Every terrorist act is connected to
every single Muslim everywhere in the entire world has to apologize. Otherwise, we know...
But if it's a white guy, acting alone doesn't represent Christianity. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Or white people.
I think you guys are talking about the difference between white patriotism and brown terrorism.
Clearly. We should get to five questions for you. And the thing is, we could talk about so much more. Religion in the UK, but we aren't going to be able to do that.
We talked about it. I don't know why you think we didn't.
I'm just saying we could talk about more. I'm just saying we're not done.
But no, we are almost at the stage where the atheists are in the majority. It's on that cusp.
It is kind of cool.
Kind of move.
We've got people with our census. People actually can put down, and this is to just piss off any of you pagans who may be listening. There are more Jedi Knights in the UK than there are pagans.
Wow.
Because you have to write down what they say.
Yeah. No, it's actually a question on the census.
Is it? Are you a Jedi Knight?
What is your religion?
There's a write-in.
When you fill in the annual, the 10-yearly census, one of the options, which that started out in 1990 as a write-in, was Jedi Knight. And then they got so many Jedi Knights answering it, they put it in as an official category.
And now, of course, if you're not an if you don't have any religion, you're going to check Jedi Knight, because why would
That just more than anything demonstrates that Britain has a better sense of humor about religion than we ever
I imagine some people would be upset about that if that happened in the United States.
It would never happen here.
There would be people protesting. Well, that you're
the government is full of religions.
Yeah, you're making fun of my religion for being on there.
Isn't it one of the things with the census that they're actually forbidden under law from asking what religion is?
I don't think they ask what religion
is. I've seen
I don't remember.
And, you know, not everybody gets the long form census here, whereas everybody does there.
No, but I used to be an enumerator, and I don't remember. I don't
think they ever ask what your religion is.
I don't think they do either, but if they do, it would be a 100% write in. It wouldn't be a tick a box. It would be, it would just be write it in.
Because there are so many different sects of Protestantism, and they all want to make sure that they say, you know, if you're a Baptist, the last thing you want to do is check Protestant.
Whoa, which kind of Baptist? Yeah. I don't want you to get it wrong.
Seventh-day Adventist?
Let's take a look at the Lutherans. Okay, am I Missouri Synod? Am I Wisconsin Synod?
Yeah, exactly.
So, never happened. So, five questions.
Okay,
moving on to five questions. Are you ready, Elliot?
I am ready.
Question one is, what is the best movie you've seen in the last 30 days?
The Extraordinary Adventures of Adele Blanc-Sec.
I've seen that.
I've heard that was good. That was the French movie at Cannes that everyone was going crazy about.
Okay.
Yes. I remember... people being crazy about it and wanting to see it and not seeing it.
It's based on a set of graphic novels from which the French do really well. How would you describe it? She is a female Indiana Jones operating in a steampunk milieu. Mm-hmm. It's fairly mildly steampunked. Sure. But this particular one had her even riding a pterosaur. What's cooler than a female Indiana Jones riding a pterosaur?
Not much I can think of, honestly. Not much in this world.
Yeah, I can't really.
I'm a great fan of it.
I'll have to see that. I wanted to see it at Rex, but the line was way past Connie's and the sandbox, and I was like,
I've seen it. It's fun. Yeah, fun movie.
I'm sure it wouldn't be hard
to find. It's on Netflix.
Oh, perfect. You can watch that.
The trouble is the Netflix one is... in French with subtitles.
Oh, that's all right.
But,
I don't have a trouble with that.
But, you know, like if you wanted it dubbed, that, which is how I saw it. But never mind.
Question number two. Who is your favorite atheist character?
Now, I ranted before we started recording about TV tropes and the way Hollywood portrays atheists.
Right. Yeah.
And I have come up with, from the Spencer Tracy... and Frederick Marsh version of Inherit the Wind, the character of E.K. Hornbeck, who was based on the atheist H.L. Mencken.
Very nice. He
has all the best lines in it, including the one as to the function of journalism. The journalist is to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable.
We watched that movie for a podcast.
Yeah, I love it. That's a Gene Kelly character.
Yeah, that was that.
And it's, you know, when you consider Gene Kelly as the Hoofer, it's such a totally different role.
Oh, he was great in that movie. He shone in every scene. Just really stole the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's a great answer.
Great answer. Well done. All right. Do I do question number three?
Question number three, that's right.
I don't remember any of this stuff anymore. Yeah. What's your geekiest hobby?
I am a gamer.
Mm.
Okay, now gamers come in a whole string of different varieties. There are two main things I am guilty of. I play Spreadsheets in Space, otherwise known as EVE Online.
Yes, our friend Thad does that.
Yeah.
And I'm in a pew-pew corp, so I'm not a Care Bear. And the other thing I am is a historical gamer. So I, you know, think of Warhammer 40K, but set in a historical setting.
So like miniature gaming?
Miniature gaming.
Civil War battles?
Actually, my specialization is the period from the beginning of the War of the League of Augsburg to the end of the War of the Seventh Coalition. In other words, 1690 to 1815.
That is a fantastic hobby.
Yeah, so I get to read, I get to paint, I get to then play with the miniatures.
Argue about historical accuracy.
And argue.
That's the best part.
Make your terrain and like where you're fighting, try to represent the actual...
Oh, yes.
That's fantastic.
I tend to be one of the gamers who believes that if I want my terrain to be as close almost to a model railroad layout can get. So in other words, if I'm fighting in, say, the peninsula in Spain during which I'm going to be doing this weekend on Saturday with a game I'm setting up, I'm going to have Spanish-looking buildings and terrain. If I was doing it as I did a couple of months ago and I'm setting it in Germany, I've got German-looking
brick
terrain.
Buildings and
yeah, and so
pine trees.
Yeah, it's got to... It's,
Lederhosen.
It's got to be visually appealing.
That is absolutely... otherwise, why would you do historical? Right.
Yeah.
Where do you play? Do you play in a shop or at home?
I play at home, but the first and third Saturday of the month, we play at the Source Comics in Games.
Oh, yeah.
They have a big section of the historical stuff that I kind of breeze through because it's so much to take in. And I mean, I've been a miniatures... gamer, but not historical. Yeah.
We did, in fact, funnily enough, on Saturday, we did one from the Age of the Country at War. And it looked like a big shop from Ran or Kagamusha.
Huh.
That's
because
amazing.
Of hundreds of Japanese figures.
That is so cool.
Do you know what scale that is?
We do ours in 10 to 15 millimeters. The Japanese we did in 15s.
Okay. A little bit smaller than, like, heroic scale stuff.
They're bigger than heroic.
Oh.
But, sorry. Sorry, they're smaller than heroics. They're about half the size.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. Well, when you're doing, you know, big scale Japanese battles here.
Yeah.
Right.
If you did heroic
scale.
We had
a lot of guys.
you'd need a space bigger than the Source, I think.
And,
all right.
You know, we've got 12 by 5 table. That's plenty.
That is awesome. Question number 4 is, what is your favorite sandwich?
Sandwich!
No, I am going to go for the po' boy, and I can. The two favourite places to get it. It's the same organisation. It's either the Smack Shack on 6th and Washington, in Minneapolis, or at the 1029 bar on Marshall and Broadway.
Yep, I used to live right over there. That's a great. I love. Yeah.
Anything specifically important about the po' boy? Anything that it has to have?
I prefer mine with sausage.
Sausage. Yeah.
Sausage. It's just like potatoes and cheese and...
Well, it's got the greenery in it, but it's got the aioli sauces. It's got the tangy sausage.
I like them with crab or deep fried shrimp. Yeah. That's also always really good. Deep fried shrimp po' boy. Excellent.
Question number 5. What is the stupidest thing anyone's ever said about your atheism?
I'm not sure it's the stupidest, because a lot of the criticisms are stupid. The one that pisses me off more than anyone is that passive aggressive, "I'll pray for you."
Oh,
you know,
God, it's
and
so
the
insulting.
The last time somebody said it to me was at the State Fair a couple of years ago when I was wandering around with a Minnesota Atheist pin on, and she said to me, "Oh, I'll pray for you if you're an atheist." And I said, "As an atheist, I'll think for you." And she said, "That's rude and insulting." I said, "Yes, and what you said was rude and insulting."
Absolutely.
It's rude and insulting. You should think on that.
I mean, somebody saying they'll pray for you in a general sense is not necessarily insulting, but when
it's
they're
so
praying for you because you're an atheist.
I feel like someone who knows you're an atheist and says, "I'll pray for you," is being insulting.
Yes.
I mean it. As well-meaning as that is, because what they should say is, "Well, I still wish you good things," or or just, "Well, I hope everything works out for you. I'll pray for you" is very specific, and like, "I know that you're wrong, that you don't believe in God and you're wrong, but I'm going to make sure I got you covered with
the
God that we both really know is there."
Most of the time what they mean is not "I'll pray for you," but like your well-being or your spiritual health, but like, "I'll pray that you'll one day realize that you're wrong and see the light."
Exactly.
That's what it is.
That's true. And it gets me every time.
Yeah.
If someone was really fat and didn't want to lose weight and you were like, "I'll run an extra mile for you tomorrow," would that be insulting? Because I feel like it's fucking insulting, right? Like, so...
and it's going to do as much good
I know that you don't think you need to lose weight, but I'm going to run an extra mile for you, so, yeah.
I'll eat an extra burger for you.
Well, Elliot, this has been a great conversation.
Truly.
As I said, I feel we've only scratched the surface.
Oh, you did.
But
we didn't touch no-go zones.
We didn't touch no-go
zones.
We'll
have to have him back.
I want to talk more about like legal like heresy and stuff like that. Like the actual things you can't say.
He shall return.
Yeah, we'll have to have you on.
And the blasphemy.
Blasphemy, that's it. Yeah, right.
Blasphemy Act.
guests. We'll have to have you back after tax season, that,
yeah.
Elliot.
Yeah.
So thanks for joining us. If you enjoyed the show, please remember, go and rate us on iTunes, hopefully positively. Send in your 5 answers to our questions at 5questions@geekswithoutgod.com.
Of course, questions.
5 questions. So we have been Geeks Without God. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we are all going to pray for you.
Yes. Yeah.
I guess I'll pray for you is more polite than saying I'm not going to do jack shit to help you.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging at geekswithoutgod.com. You can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod, and you can even like us on Facebook.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
1 year, I am going to go to Convergence, and I am actually going to make more than one panel.
Hey, wait a minute, don't go. Speaking of religion in the UK, we just wanted to let you know about a listener, Steve, in the UK, who's been ordered by a judge to take his son to Catholic Mass. We think that's all sorts of bullshit, and there's a petition you can sign in the show notes so you can make sure everyone knows how much bullshit you think it is as well. Please, help Steve out.